Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week. Through the lens of original thought, it's good to have everyone with us, especially everyone up in the Buffalo, New York area, where New York Governor Kathy Hochul has gone hysterical since Friday, and on Saturday, as a matter of fact, she canceled the Buffalo Bills football game because of the possibility of snow. That's right. The game has been rescheduled, possibly for Monday, possibly later, if Kathy gets scared. That's right. It's possible that 1 to 2 feet of snow could fall in the Buffalo, New York area over the next 24 to 48 hours. And since nothing like that has ever happened in the history of Buffalo before, Governor Hochul's gone on lockdown. Heavy winds also possible, possibly heavy winds. She was in communication with NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell regarding the dangerous conditions in Buffalo. And she released a tweet on X and... Well, there you have it. So, what does that mean in the big picture? Well, it just means Kathy Hochul's gone hysterical. But then again, she's a hysteric. That's her. I believe it would be an hysteric, I suppose. But don't presume that everyone has gone hysterical and soft, because that's not the case. Governor Hochul has... no jurisdiction here at the McBurney compound, where after 3 months of serious effort, concerted effort, we have trapped, shot, and skinned our very first coyote. The coyote took at least a dozen chickens. So it's not like the coyote didn't have it coming. Although I'm not sure Kathy Hochul would understand. She might go all hysterical if we were to tell her the story and show her the carcass and the skin. But the coyote has been subdued for the moment, because this is only one coyote, possibly of many coyotes. One thing Governor Hochul has warned us about is the potential for more coyotes. And her suggestion was to lock down and hide. And all right. So anyway, that's that. I've got the skin of the coyote is in the studio right now, dripping dry. So this is our first time with any tanning experience here. But with people like Kathy Hochul in charge, it won't be long before all of us will be skinning our own clothes and eating coyote carcasses before long, if they have their way. All right, so let's go from there to something else being destroyed by hysterical leftists. And that is the airline industry. Incidents continue to pile up, according to a report I pulled down from a right-wing conspiratorial website who put together a number of different disturbing allegations regarding near misses. And then that turns into what is a conspiracy of the stupid, the inept, and the incompetent that's going to end up getting someone killed. And people are starting to notice. I've been talking about this for, since the first time I started getting nervous about getting on airplanes, which was well over a year ago. When the near misses started piling up and you actually have a ticket and you have to fly, then you're not considered hysterical if you have some concerns about the pilot and his training. Forgive me. When I look into the cockpit of the airplane that I'm about to fly on, what I want to see is an older white guy. Now, call me racist. I apologize up front. That's what I want to see. I want to see a I want to see an older white guy who looks in pretty good health with a little gray in his hair. Not too much, but a little bit. So the right-wing conspiracy theorists have started to notice that planes are bumping into each other and falling 20,000 feet at a time and smashing people's shoulders. And so they're saying, what's going on? And it turns out the DEI hiring has been going on since the Obama administration. Then COVID swept through with the vax mandates and the hysteria, drove a lot of pilots and controllers and other administrators to retire early and just get out. And the experienced staff at the airlines and at the airports are being replaced by, well, let's just say less competent people, some of them hired because of the amount of melanin in their skin. And so, but the CNN had a report on their website, because I checked the CNN website. Yeah, I used to check the Drudge website, but now you can just check CNN. And so I check CNN, and they have an article regarding airline safety that it just stinks of being a propaganda response. And you can tell by the byline, it's written by a quota hire named Hassan Shahidi. Hassan Shahidi is the president and CEO of the Flight Safety Foundation. Did you catch his name was Hassan Shahidi? Does anyone recognize the irony in the CEO of the Flight Safety Foundation being named Hassan Shahidi? No? Am I racist for just noticing that that's ironic, that the Flight Safety... Okay, I'll move on from that because I don't want to be accused of anything like that. Certainly not. Hassan, the quota hire over at CNN who writes on airline safety, writes the following. With no reported fatal accidents involving large commercial flights in scheduled service, 2023 has been widely hailed as one of the safest years in the history of aviation. And the air transport system is safe, unquote. I know it's unusual for a guy named Hassan Shahidi to have a homo lisp, but he's a quota hire at CNN. And so they check off two boxes with Shahidi. He's a textbook example of a DEI hire over at CNN. And he's telling us, don't worry, the air transport system is safe. How would he know? Well, number one, his name is Hassan. And number two, he's the CEO, president and CEO, by the way, of the Flight Safety Foundation, he said, unironically. And nobody was supposed to notice. Okay. He says the air transport system is safe. But then he goes on in the article to, well, he talks about the plane that just crashed in Japan and the door that blew off the plane up there in Washington. And there was all those other near misses and planes bumping into each other and almost hitting each other and almost exploding into flames and killing everybody. And Hassan notes that these recent events serve as critical reminders of the dynamic and evolving nature of aviation systems. Is that really what it reminds us of, Hassan? The dynamic and evolving nature of the aviation system? I think it reminds us that it's getting scary to get on an airplane. That's what it reminds me of, anyways. So I don't think of dynamic and evolving natures, at least not... That's not my default thought pattern, but... When you're just cobbling together a bunch of words and vomiting them out on a page, and you're a quota hire and people barely read what you write, it doesn't much matter what he writes as long as he gets the line in there that the air transport system is safe. Hassan goes on, after listing all the times that people could have been, should have been, and even were killed in the safest, one of the safest, by the way, one of the safest years in the history of aviation. The only year that was safer was 1914, and that was before anyone was flying. And it was perfectly safe. But 2023 was one of the safest since then. He goes on to say, there are indicators that while not causing direct harm, can signal potential risks or vulnerabilities that might lead to safety incidences if unaddressed. So that's his way of admitting that things are happening that indicate that, yes, a plane is going to crash and a bunch of people are going to die, and we're going to find out it's because there was an incompetent buffoon either at the controls or in the air traffic control tower. That's what that sentence meant. He then concludes by saying, quote, we stand at an inflection point in the evolution of aviation safety, poised to redefine what safety means in the skies. Unquote. And you're like, hey, Hassan, I was pretty good with what safety meant in the skies before. I'm not really looking for a redefinition. Thank you very much. Especially with a bunch of DEI certified hiring managers and a guy named Hassan at the Flight Safety Foundation. He's like, yeah, I know you can't make that up. That Hassan is at the anyway, I have a ticket. I have to get on a plane. And it's cold, number one. And when it's cold already, that makes things a little bit more sketchy. And then on top of the cold, you got the DEI hires, and you just never know what's going to happen. And I don't worry about inflection points or reimagining or redefining what safety means. I don't want my plane to crash, especially when it's cold, because when it's cold, even if you survive the crash, now you're out. You're like laying out in a cold field somewhere. I mean, sure, the plane might be burning, and so you might get some heat from that. But you're thrown out into a snow-covered, ice-covered field. I mean, even if you survive, it's going to be very uncomfortable. Who wants to even think about that? Right? Talk about an inflection point. Talk about reimagining anything. I tell you what, I would rather be locked in a cage with Kathy Hochul, right? In Buffalo Bills Stadium in the freezing cold than have to sit through a session with the hiring managers for the airlines right now and actually see what's going on. Because to read about it in an article secondhand, it might give you some pause and give some concern, but if you were to actually have to sit in the conference room as the DEI certified hiring managers are sifting through the relatively incompetent brown, red, yellow, and black people, well, then you might just cash your ticket in. And just say, you know what? Not even like a Bills game, right? Don't even reschedule it. View, but I'm Doug McBurney. There we go. That sounded like it was coming from underneath the snow and ice all of that is where it sounded like. So now we go over to Iran, where last week we watched the Iranian so-called Houthi rebels there in Yemen as they fired missiles and drones at commercial ships and then finally at a U.S. Navy ship. And we managed to fight them all off and shoot them all down, and supposedly, and who knows what's actually happening over there. It's unfortunate that you can no longer believe the powers that be to report things as they are. Not that that was ever 100% guaranteed in war, but now we could be being flagrantly misled in order to be fed into the hands of the enemy. That was never a concern before. The concern before was that the government might dress things up, then they might make things look better than they are. They might issue a little bit of propaganda in order to push public opinion in a certain way, and yes, and all that. But we were never concerned that we were actually being handed off into the jaws of our enemy by traitors. That was never a concern before. Now it is. And so the Houthis shot their rockets and their drones at everything that moved last week. And they even seized a tanker. Listen to this. Iranian naval forces seized a Marshall Islands flag tanker in the Red Sea this past week. That same tanker had been seized by the United States last year for transporting unauthorized Iranian cargo. Basically, we seized a ship for violating our embargo, and the Iranians just seized it back. Uh-huh. They're quite bold in attacking the world's greatest superpower, right? How could that be? Don't they realize that we could just vaporize them in a moment? Well, of course they realize that could be done. But they don't seem to believe it will be done for whatever reason. And let's hope they're wrong. And so, by the way, those who have been reporting in the alleged right-wing media over the past week about the expanding forever war in the Middle East and equating this with the military-industrial complex bamboozle going on in Ukraine right now. War with Iran is not the military-industrial complex just starting a war to make money. That there's a difference. I know that Tucker Carlson and all his minions and almost everyone else in the so-called right-wing media seem to think now that any time a shot is fired in anger, it's the military-industrial complex and the CIA, and they're just... No, that's not always the case. War with Iran has been a long time coming. War against Iran should have been made in 1979, and we should have toppled the mullahs before they ever took control and started a terrorist state. And now have murdered hundreds of thousands of people, destabilized nations, probably led to the deaths of millions of people. The fact that we didn't have the courage to topple the Iranian mullahs back in 1979 and install our own version of an Iranian democracy or whatever you wanted to call it. Because we fell down back then being cowards. Or worse, because there were cowards or worse in the State Department back then. Now we have to deal with what we're dealing with now, which is Iran on the verge of having a nuclear weapon. And it could very well be that the reason they're not that concerned with provoking a significant military strike from the United States is because that may be part of their plan to justify their revelation of possession of a nuclear weapon. And the world is conditioned right now. A significant plurality, if not a majority, of the nations of the United Nations have been conditioned to side with Iran if we blow a bunch of stuff up in Iran and then they do a nuclear test. So anyway, meanwhile, we have a Secretary of State is a guy named Anthony Blinken, which I thought was ironic because when you're in a negotiation, you don't want to be blinking. Now, who blinks first, right? Nobody sees the irony in any of this anymore. You're not allowed to say that the name Anthony Blinken is ironic in that he's quite possibly the most inept, embarrassing, traitorous, possibly. The inept and embarrassing is my best hope for Anthony Blinken. My worst suspicion is that he's actually a hired traitor by the other side. He's not supposed to blink in negotiations, but his name is Blinken. Before I move on from the military tactical analysis, America struck back over this past weekend with, I forget how many, let's see, I might have a report on how many targets we struck. We struck 60 targets in Yemen. Finally, I've been asking, when are we going to shoot back? Well, we finally shot back. Hit 60 targets in Yemen on Friday into Saturday. Hit another dozen or so Sunday into Monday there in Yemen. And that is our response to the Iranian-backed Houthi militants' attempts to disrupt shipping in the... And so the crowd went wild. Yay, America's back. And we took those Houthis out. But unfortunately, Anthony Blinken briefed, before Anthony Blinken struck the Houthis there in Yemen, he briefed the leaders of Turkey, Greece, Jordan, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and Saudi Arabia on the U.S. plan to hit Yemen. And so the reporter over at the Gateway Pundit asks, what are the odds that one of these countries warned the Houthis? What are the odds? The odds are 100%. It's just a matter of who and how accurate was their warning. And that would depend on how much information Blinken leaked to the friends of the Houthis here, meaning Turkey, Greece, Jordan, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and even in Saudi Arabia. Even in Saudi Arabia, there are sympathetic Muslims who will help their friends in Yemen against the great Satan. And it's just a matter of how much did we leak to them and how much got leaked to them, how accurate was it, and how fast were the Iranians in Yemen able to hide their rockets and their radar sites and all the things they've been using to attack us. How much of their stuff did we blow up in our retaliatory strikes? Well, the week to come will bear that out, right? Because if we struck effectively, it should take them at least a week to fix all the stuff we blew up. So you would think that the international shipping lanes of the Red Sea leading to the Suez Canal should be relatively free of military attack through at least the next week. And so we'll see. The next week will bear it all out. Okay, but let me just say that there are signs in the air that the next week's not going to look so great. Okay, and let me just start with what I would call a diplomatic slap in the face from people who should be thanking us. They should be thanking us and inviting us, and instead they slapped us in the face. Tony Blinken showed up. He went to Tel Aviv, and he talked to the Israelis there for a little while, and then he went on to Ramallah, which is a Palestinian-ruled territory, and he met with Mahmoud Abbas, allegedly to discuss post-war plans for Gaza. And Blinken and Hamas met up there on a dais, and they shook hands. And behind them was a photo of the Dome of the Rock that sits atop the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, and a Palestinian flag there in the background. What was missing? Well, as Abbas and Blinken sat down in their respective chairs, everybody noticed that there was a giant Palestinian flag behind behind Abbas, but there was no American flag behind Blinken. And people in the know started looking around and saying, how come the American flag is missing from the stage? Because it's just standard diplomatic practice that when two diplomats meet and they sit down in front of cameras, each one's flag is behind him. So for the cameras and all. It's just common courtesy. But Mahmoud Abbas did not feel obligated to extend a very common diplomatic courtesy to Anthony Blinken. Why? Because he knows Anthony Blinken's a chump and Joe Biden's a vacuous, empty suit. And there's no one to be afraid of up there. And there's nobody to extend courtesy to. Why should you be courteous to people that you hate? And so Mahmoud Abbas was discourteous. And so, now is it possible that Blinken and the rest of the perverts running America's foreign policy, maybe they were just too distracted? They were on the trip focused on the booze and the drugs and the shopping and the food, and they didn't notice that they left the flag out until later. They woke up hungover the next morning and like, oh man, the flag wasn't there. What a bummer. I hope the boss didn't notice that. Now that's possible. In fact, that's our best hope, is that, right? And that really is a sign of where we are. That's our best hope, is that everybody was too busy satisfying their own appetites and lusts to notice the significant diplomatic insult being handed to the hapless Tony Blinken by the devious and evil Mahmoud Abbas. So anyway, was it just stupidity and incompetence, or was it on purpose? And the sad fact is, either way, it bodes ill for the future, long term, short term. This afternoon, it bodes not very well. Here we go. More targets. The U.S. is warning Iran that we could strike more targets if they continue to attack shipping lanes in the Red Sea. That just came out this morning over the Voice of America. America said, okay, now we've blown up all your stuff. Now stop shooting at us, or there's going to be consequences. Which indicates to me that we left some of their stuff intact, or at least we think we left some of it intact, and that's our best hope. The worst hope is that we know it's intact. We left it intact because we intended it to be intact, because our leadership at the highest level has been sold out. They're traitors, and they're actually working for the enemy. Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. As we stand on the precipice of World War III or something like that, we look at what's happening with the Israelis, who I've called them the canary in the coal mine. Others have as well. Certainly not an original thought of mine. But as things go with America's closest ally in the Middle East, so things tend to go. And right now, according to reports, Israeli intelligence is aware of the exact whereabouts of Yahya Sinwar. And that is the lead demon over at Hamas. He's the boss of Hamas. He's the CEO of Hamas. And he's hiding out in the tunnels that the Israelis have not yet destroyed. And they know exactly where he is, because they have intelligence all over the place. and they're able to see and hear things all over the place in Gaza. And so they know exactly where he is down in the tunnels, but they have restrained from striking him. Why? Because he has surrounded himself with dozens of hostages as human shields. The hostages you read about, that CNN puts up a story about how the families in Israel are so upset that their hostage relatives have not been returned. That's what CNN reports on. The cowardly whining of the families whose family members have been taken hostage. They shouldn't be allowed to publicly whine. Do they have no idea about military operations in Israel anymore? You don't let the family whine to the media about their hostage family members. That's not allowed. But they're allowed. Because I don't really know. And not that, do I sympathize with the families whose members have been taken hostage? I do. In fact, I encourage them to pick up a rifle and go find your family member. Don't whine to CNN or anyone else in the media about anything. Pick up a gun and go find your aunt. Or if you want to complain to CNN, how about we throw you in jail? All right. Anyway. So the Israeli intelligence and the military intelligence, they know exactly where this guy is, but they won't blow him up because they would kill the hostages. He's in the tunnels in southern Gaza. They're tracking him. And according to, let's see, I've got a report here from Jonathan Schanzer, president of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. He says the Israeli leadership is in an impossible bind. Take out Sinwar, the head of Hamas, the man who is most guilty for the October 7th massacres, and potentially strike the most serious blow to Hamas since the war began. But in the process, they would kill the hostages they have vowed to rescue. And so Jonathan Schanzer over at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies calls this an impossible bind. And so the reason Schanzer thinks this is an impossible bind is because Schanzer does not know how to fight a war. And I'm afraid no longer do the Israelis know how to fight a war. So the first rule in war is people are going to be killed. In fact, when you decide to fight a war, you actually legalize killing people. So that the first thing that goes out the window is the idea that people are not going to be killed. People are going to be killed on purpose. And in a war, potentially killing a hostage in pursuit of rescuing him is not to be the deciding factor in his rescue. Or in killing the kidnappers, right? In fact, killing the kidnappers and striking the fear of God into anyone contemplating such activity, that has to be the overriding principle, even if the hostages get killed. Because we're at war. People are going to get killed for political purposes. That's what war is. But nobody seems to understand or remember that anymore. And by the way, if people believed in God, If any of these people believed in God, the hostages, the terrorists, the Israeli military, if any of them believed in God, then they would know that getting killed is not the be-all and end-all. And there's a greater good that can be achieved even if I get killed in the process, or even if my aunt gets killed in the process. But this is proof that none of them believe in God. None of them believe in God. None of them are certain of what's going to happen after they die, and so they're absolutely terrified of dying, and they're absolutely unable to accept the justification that might be associated with the killing of their relative who happened to have been kidnapped. They're not able to process that. because the loss of this life is the be-all and end-all to them. And that's a dangerous combination. When people are too scared to die for the right cause, then the evil and the wicked prosper. Because the decent people become cowards. And that's all it takes. So people think that what's happening in the Middle East and what might be happening in the Taiwan Strait, what's happening, they think all this is just the military-industrial complex gearing up for the next big money bag war. No, this is the inevitable consequence of the decent people becoming soft cowards. That's what this is. So it's not the military-industrial complex. They might have their houses blown up on this one. So that's not what this is. But meanwhile, while all this is going on and the world stands on the precipice of interesting times at the very least, let's go to the bad religion file where North Korea tested a ballistic missile up over the skies around South Korea. So that's just now, trust me, Kim Jong-un, he's not part of Raytheon. He's not part of the military-industrial complex looking to gin up conflict in order to make money. What he is that he's an evil guy who sees that the West are a bunch of weak, sap, spent, weak, all of that. That's what this is. Same with the Iranians. And so while Kim Jong-un launches his ballistic missile test, the latest of, I don't know, 100 or whatever since Bill Clinton, North Korea's parliament spent a good part of last week passing a ban on dog meat. That's what South Korea's parliament was up to. Public calls for a prohibition on the eating of dog meat, which is tradition in Korea. I know, it strikes us in the West as, ooh, dog meat. Okay, well, in Korea, they've been eating it for 1,000 years or whatever. They have dog farms where they grow dogs for food. And by the way, there have been times in Korea where millions of people starved to death in the not-too-distant past. And so it's a little different culture than, let's say, Kansas City, where we don't eat dogs. Anyway, but the South Korea's parliament has passed a bill that you know is not moral because the bill won't go into effect for 3 more years, and it will ban the breeding and sales of dog meat for human consumption as of 2027. You could go to prison. It does not provide any penalties for eating dog meat, only for making it or selling it, proving that none of this is moral. This is all virtue signaling. Because some people in the West are uncomfortable with the idea that some people eat dogs, and so people in Korea want to appear like they're nice people, and so they're gonna introduce a ban on dog meat. Dog meat consumption is neither explicitly banned or legal in South Korea. It just is. Like eating cows is not illegal or legal in Kansas City. It just is. So it's not a moral issue. Now, according to polls in Korea, the majority of people no longer eat dog meat. A majority. And this law, according to the legislation itself, says, quote, this law is aimed at contributing to realizing the values of animal rights, which pursue respect for life and a harmonious coexistence between humans and animals. Leaving out the cows, forget the pigs, forget the chickens. This is not about animal rights. Well, actually, this is about animal rights. This opens the door to the self-righteous elevation of animals to the status of persons with rights. And mark my words, if we allow this to be forced into the legal structure of Korea, this will be yet another springboard used by the godless heathen atheists to say, see, we did it for dogs. What about the chickens? What about the pigs? What about the cows? Look at those big brown eyes. Come on. And they'll just continue to elevate the rights, the alleged rights of animals over humans as they plot to murder humans and actively murder humans, which they do every day. And so another thing, so this is also an unnecessary injection of social tension into Korean culture. It's not necessary. You know what? If the majority in Korea decides to not eat dog meat, eventually the dog meat farms and they'll all go away. And it'll all happen of its own social inertia and motion, and it'll just happen. And nobody will feel like they're being forced or punished or anything like that. If the days of eating dog meat in Korea are going to pass, then they'll pass. And maybe they should. I mean, I personally, I don't want to eat a dog. Would I eat a dog? Well, if I was starving, I might eat a dog. In fact, I'm willing to admit that I probably would. Okay, if you know, we had the coyote here at the McBurney compound last week, and I got to see that carcass. And I'll tell you this, I'd have to be pretty hungry before I would eat that. But I did. There was a good bit of meat on there. And I actually thought about that. So, you know, what if we were starving and it was, you know, well, there's a good bit of meat there. So anyway, but I don't eat dog. Do I think it should be illegal to eat dogs? Well, maybe in Kansas City. Actually, I just don't know. But in Korea, certainly not necessary. So we should let uncomfortable social mores of no criminal intent just stand or fall on their own societal acceptance and inertia and motion. And don't push the overthrowing of mores on the people if they're not immoral. That's all. It reminds me of the civil rights movement. And I know, so the civil rights movement is the one thing that no one is allowed to ever question. We're all supposed to bow and scrape and worship all of the participants in the civil rights movement. We're supposed to bow and scrape and worship the Voting Rights Act and bow and scrape every law that forced white people to invite black people into their realm. We're supposed to celebrate that. And I'm just here to tell you that that was already happening. White people were already on the way to letting black people drink from the same water fountain. It would have happened. But instead, the government got involved and forced it on people. And so in injecting that unnecessary social tension, because I don't care what you say, it's not a crime to say I don't want to hang out with those people. That's not a crime. You might be a jerk. You might sell yourself short socially, economically, spiritually by cutting off a certain race because you don't like the way they look. But it's not a crime. You're just a jerk. And people could be jerks, and eventually all the jerks die out, and we all would have shared the water fountains. But instead, the government came in, and they injected social tension, unnecessary social tension, in order to have control and to manipulate and to lord it over people. It basically makes liberty into dog meat. Weekly Worldview, and we're back. Very, very controversial segment there to question the civil rights movement and the sanctity and the holiness of everything involved. I remember as I was a young child, in the early 1970s, this is after the Voting Rights Act and after the civil rights movement and after the government had declared that white people will be forced to accept black people within their businesses and their schools and all of that, I remember being on a bus when I was in maybe first grade, maybe second grade. And I remember the bus stopped at a bus stop, and it picked up a bunch of black kids. And it was the first time I ever saw black kids. I never saw black kids before that. Not because I hated them or I was a racist. It's just that in my tiny little town of 200 people, there happened to be no black people. And so they picked up the black people, and they got on the bus, and we all noticed that they looked different from us. But we didn't immediately hate them, and we all managed to get along. And it wasn't until years later, we played at the pool together, and it wasn't until years later that I was informed that there was tension between us. We didn't know. Now, our parents and our grandparents, they knew. They knew that the only reason those black kids were getting on that bus was because the government forced the integration of the bus and the swimming pool. Now, we as little kids, we had no idea. So we hung out with the black kids. We played with the black kids. We noticed they looked different. Sometimes we joked about them being black and they joked about us being pale. Anyway, but so there was no tension with us, but there was tension with our parents and our grandparents. And had the communist tyrants just let things move along, then the children eventually would have just played with each other, and the parents and the grandparents wouldn't have hated each other over it, and we wouldn't have this undercurrent of racial animosity that is now available to be flogged and stoked by the tyrants anytime they want it. Anytime they want it. All right, so anyways, let's move on now to the Justice File, where we have a sailor in the United States Navy wearing the Navy uniform of the United States of America who has been sentenced to prison for conspiring with Chinese intelligence, receiving a bribe, and transmitting documents. What were they? They don't say what they were. Well, it doesn't matter what they were. If you're wearing the uniform and you transmit documents to a foreign country for money, I thought you were put on trial, and when you were convicted, you were shot. That's what I thought, or hung. But no, this guy gets, he gets 27 months. His prison sentence is so short, they measure it in months rather than years. 27 months in prison for Petty Officer Wenheng Zhao. Petty Officer Wenheng Zhao, a naturalized U.S. citizen, born in China. So forgive me, but perhaps it's my racism. I don't think we should be allowing naturalized Chinese to join the U.S. military. Call me a racist. I think there's the potential for future conflict with China. And I would not be letting their naturalized citizens join the Navy. And if anyone transmits documents to a foreign government for money, they should be executed. People in the military should be terrified to do anything like that. And I don't. When did it change that you get a year in jail? Because at 27 months, what does that mean? Good behavior, and what, he makes a deal, he appeal, who knows? He'd get out of jail in a year. Maybe he'll be promoted. Maybe they'll put him in officer candidate school. They'll send him to Annapolis. Ay, ay, ay. I don't know. Since when did this change? Maybe it's just something in my mind that I was, maybe I'm deluded to think that. Okay, so now from there, we go to France. And the politics file, where French President Emmanuel Macron has appointed Gabriel Attal, a 34-year-old open, unrepentant pervert who practices his perversion publicly in front of people. Well, he doesn't practice it. But he talks about it all the time, that he's a pervert. He's France's youngest, and according to the National Pulse, France's youngest and first openly gay. And that doesn't mean happy, by the way. That doesn't mean he's always throwing confetti and glitter everywhere and all smiles. No, it means he's a pervert. And he likes to tell people about it, which is the worst kind of pervert. He's a pervert that is demanding that other people declare his perversion as good and then smile and go along with it as if it's okay. And you know what? Most people will. To avoid a conflict and to go along with a guy through whom they might be able to make some money or achieve some level of security in their life, they're willing to go along with the fact that this guy's a pervert. And I'm not going to say anything because it's in my better interest not to. Well, I'm going to say something. The guy's a pervert. He should be arrested for what he advocates and put on trial. He should not be the prime minister of France, but he is. And so there you go. What does that tell you about France? What? Like we needed to know anymore. He succeeds Elizabeth Borne, who's the former prime minister, who's another pervert who will be associated along with Emmanuel Macron and this new perv, Gabriel. They will all be associated with the collapse of Western Europe into its next great civilizational catastrophe. They will all be associated. When history looks back on what happened, how did that 1,000 years of darkness in Europe occur? How did all those hundreds of millions of people get slaughtered? Emmanuel Macron, Gabriel Attal, Elizabeth Borne, they will all be associated with it. Just like when you read about World War II and the appeasers and how bad they looked after Hitler went berserk and conquered all of Europe. Everyone was like, boy, I can't believe those guys were appeasing him. Well, the whole world was. Everybody was going along. The majority in Europe and the United States all supported appeasing Hitler because, hey, maybe he's got a better idea. I mean, it all looks bad now in retrospect. But at the time, the whole world was headed for the cliff. The whole world. And this is worse. I mean, at least the Nazis, they kept their faggotry a secret. They had some shame about some things. These perverts have none. So if you think the slaughter of 6 million Jews, if you think that was an atrocity that cannot be matched, you're wrong. Because there's worse than the Nazis coming. Way worse. And Emmanuel Macron and this other perv and all the pervs who are open about their perversion, they won't stop at 6 million Jews, I'll tell you that. All right. Meanwhile, so now we report our annual, not annual, weekly, daily report on the aliens. That's right. We've been wondering, is it going to be Disease X? Is it going to be a variant even worse than COVID? Or is it going to be aliens that are used to disrupt the 2024 election? Oh, I forgot about World War III. It could also be World War III. It's going to be something. Barring the assassination or the unfortunate, unexplained death of Donald Trump, something has to disrupt the 2024 election. And right now, I'm leaning toward aliens because of stories like this. We have, this guy went and testified up on Capitol Hill. Lawmakers had a classified briefing from a former Air Force officer. An officer? Oh, his name's David Grush. And the lawmakers left the classified briefing. No, some of them said they were largely disappointed. But they vowed to hold more hearings because I guess their disappointment led them to believe that they needed to hold more hearings. Grush, with some lawmakers, improved his status as a whistleblower. That's right, they call him a whistleblower. In fact, we have Paulina Luna, a Republican from Florida who is certifiably hysterical, said, I believe he's telling the truth about the aliens. He's a credible witness. I'm very scared about the aliens. I think the CIA is hiding them. I think they have a craft. I think they have the alien bodies. They're getting ready for the invasion of the body snatchers. I believe him.
Unquote. That was hysterical Representative Anna Paulina Luna, associated with the moon there. So she found him credible. A number of other people did not find him very credible. But he's going to get another hearing because, for whatever reason, the powers that be want to keep the alien story on the back burner just in case it's necessary. I saw a video this week. Well, it made the rounds. If you pay attention to social media or internet reportage at all, I'm sure you saw it. It was the jellyfish UFO. How many of you have seen this? I pulled the story down from OutKick, which is a bunch of adolescent jocks with a collective IQ equal to a bowl of Jell-O. Speaking of jellyfish, the collective IQ of everyone employed at OutKick is approximately a bowl of Jell-O. And they had a story and a link to this video. They call it insane video. Shows a jellyfish UFO that couldn't be shot down. It was invisible on night vision. All this, and then you watch the video. And, well, let me read from the UFO video has been released. One of the craziest ever seen. Most OutKick readers know that the topic has blown up here. Readers? You don't have readers at OutKick. Nobody at OutKick can read above a third grade level. They're watchers, which is why you've got them watching this video. They say that now the video topic has hit a boiling point over at OutKick when the whistleblower David Grush testified in front of Congress about non-human recovered remains and crashed craft, and people possibly have even been murdered to cover up the truth, possibly, says the geniuses at OutKick. And then they go on, they say, watch this stunning video of the jellyfish. So when you watch the video, which I'm not going to post to it, just look for Google jellyfish UFO. It's obviously an anomaly in the equipment on a lens somewhere. It's not real. It's an optical illusion from some electronic interference or even a piece of smuts on the lens or something. It's obvious. But it somehow intrigues the relatively stupid boys over at OutKick, and all of their viewers are watching it, and everybody's ready for the invasion of body snatchers. So, and meanwhile, over in China, for several years, according to Red State, China has been ramping up its program to detect alien technology elsewhere in the universe. That's right. They have been building infrastructure similar to the United States Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, SETI. Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. I have a hard time even saying it. But SETI is where the government is squandering millions of dollars with radio waves and receivers trying to find a top 40 station being played by another alien civilization or something like that. Well, China has now ramped up a similar operation to find aliens first. They're interested in first contact first. It's a space race, but it's a little different than, yeah, they want to. Now, the reporter at Red State does report that neither the American SETI operation or the ramped up Chinese operation has proven fruitful. Indeed, in 50 years of searching, we have never found clear evidence of extraterrestrial life of any kind anywhere in the universe. But China's new Far Neighbor Project. This is our Far Neighbor Project. We hope to find our neighbor who is far away in space. Alien. That's right. Far Neighbor is alien. And we Chinese will hope to make a first contact before America. And so their Far Neighbor Project is setting its sights on first contact. Their ambition is to accelerate the process of SETI and perhaps even eclipse the Americans in the hysterical, self-fulfilling, delusional prophecy of finding aliens. And so there you have it. Okay. Now, after all that craziness and the world teetering on the brink of World War III, I just want to send out a warning to Martin Scorsese. He says he's going to make a movie about Jesus that's going to radically alter public opinion on organized religion. My advice to Martin Scorsese, don't do it. Stop. Stop. You've already made Passion of the Christ. Your torture in one of the worst parts of hell is already going to be so bad that you need to stop now. Because you're only pouring it hotter and more miserable upon yourself, Martin. Stop it. Now, I know. So Scorsese's trying to make up for his role in the corruption of morals that he has participated in. His contributions to the cesspool by movie after movie after movie is incalculably horrible. And he knows he's got a guilty conscience. And so he meets with the Pope. The Pope tells him, make a movie about Jesus, and that's going to help. I'm telling you, Martin, the Pope's wrong. That's not going to go over well on Judgment Day when you make yet another movie about Jesus. It's only going to make him more angry at you. You should stop now. You should make a movie on hell. Make a movie on hell that might get your attention, Marty. Because if you don't repent, it's only getting hotter by the minute for you, buddy. Okay, take my advice. Now, meanwhile, from the Real Science File, the Zika virus has been found to reduce levels of proteins that can be harmful in healthy people, but these are proteins that form in excess levels for patients with certain types of cancer. Cancers like neuroblastoma produce high levels of CD24 protein. Well, Zika, researchers are using Zika to target and reduce that very protein, and reduction of those proteins can be bad for healthy people, but good for people with cancer. So the Zika virus is being used to reduce tumor size in mice in experiments. Some of the mice who received the highest doses of Zika had complete elimination of their tumors. So the Zika virus, which is also can be bad for healthy people, the Zika virus can be good for people with cancer. Anyway, this is just more evidence that viruses, bacteria, all the things that can lead to harm and disease today, and even the CD24 protein, which is a developmental protein, it's key to the development of the human fetus. All of these things were all originally good. The viruses and the parasites and the bacteria included, they were all originally good and had a life-sustaining purpose in the original creation. Unfortunately, due to the fall and sin, these things have become bad and dangerous and deadly. But if scientists and researchers look at them from the perspective of creation, there is a chance that we will be able to reverse engineer things back closer and closer to where they were before the fall. And we could be on the precipice of amazing advancements in medicine. And so we encourage researchers to look at science through the lens of creation. And then that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank you for being here. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.